Welcome to the PMPA's Speaking of Precision podcast, featuring your hosts, Carly Kistler-Miller, David Wynn, and Miles Free.
Hi, I'm Miles Free, and welcome to PMPA's Speaking of Precision podcast. Carly Kistler-Miller and David Wynn have joined me today, and we are going to discuss a wrap-up on our New England Mastery Tour. Welcome, Carly. Welcome, David.
Thanks, Miles.
Thank you, Miles.
Well, we just got back at this recording. We just got back on Saturday from our second tour of the final tour of Mastery Program 2023, and we bopped around New England with a hurricane on our backside, but hurricane never caught us, so PMPA members, we're too fast.
Bopped around. I think I lived the entire week in that coach.
You did not, because we went on 10 tours in 3 days.
Okay, 3 days. 3 days.
3 days. Well, 2.5 days, yeah. Technically. Yeah. So, yes, there was a lot of bus time, but wow. What did we see? All right, let's start off. We started with Boston Centerless.
Shigeo Shingo, Silver Award for Manufacturing. Where to start? David, start us off.
Boston Centerless. It was an incredible place. It really just amazing. One of the things that you notice right away is that they have everything written in, it was Filipinese, and what was the other language on the
Vietnamese.
Wall?
Vietnamese.
Vietnamese and
Cambodian, I think.
Cambodian. That was the two languages. So it's a strong area for immigrants, and a lot of their signs had that, and they had this incredible culture of craftsmanship. It was really cool to see. We saw that on display. You know, we got to actually see them hand straightening bars.
Yeah, it was interesting to see from my perspective, because I'm still trying to figure out all the differences between all the different bar types, and the tour guides did a really great job of explaining what they did. You could tell they were very proud of what they do.
I think the thing that impressed me probably the most about the Boston Centerless visit was how the people that we spoke to that were working on the product actually understood the value they were creating. They knew that they were, if they got the straightness right, it wouldn't give the person with the machine a problem, and therefore their bars would be easier to use than run-of-the-mill bars for the customer. So they really understood that they were putting their skill into their material, which is why they call it skilled material. But I mean, you could see it. I mean, that one-off straightening by hand was, that's a sight you're not going to see anywhere else.
They did. They had a real pride in craftsmanship.
It was incredible, too, because they straightened the bars before they ground them, and then they checked them and re-straightened as necessary. So they ran them through a Miko and were straightening them, and they had that awesome machine that they had there. It was a Miko machine that they could check the straightness with true. It had, like, V-blocks on 16-inch centers. And had the indicator they could run up and down the bar. I mean, it was really incredible attention to detail and quality.
Well, you know, that attention to detail, that was also evidenced by their training. So they don't just train you on the machine. You literally were trained for a product and an item. Almost, their training was almost by SKU.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, when you look at their training board, they're training by diameter and material type. So when you're going to run a grinder, have you run quarter inch before? And have you run 360 brass before? Have you run 303 before? I mean, it's really incredible.
Yeah, it was probably, if there was a show called Extreme Documentation, I would probably nominate them to participate. They'd be my bet.
Discovery Networks is calling.
Well, and then we went on to Datanomics, and I have to admit that tour was not what I thought it was going to be. It was really interesting. Because they put us all in an auditorium to begin with, and just started a conversation.
Yes.
Just started.
If you ever went somewhere that was not a sales pitch, that was it. It was really incredible. They had a conversation about data and did everything they could to not talk about their product.
Yeah. Well, and what was interesting too, and I know this was by design because they're pretty clever over there. So then after that, we all go and mill about and they give us cookies and water, which by that time we were grateful for, and had their information on display, and everybody wanted to talk about what
right.
their offerings were.
What's on the dashboard, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It was such a cool conversation because they involved every single person in the room in the conversation using technology.
Well, that's true. So that was a highlight, using the ubiquitous iPhone or cell phone to allow everybody to participate comfortably was certainly a great takeaway. The other thing that I thought was really a value add for that stop was that this was a disciplined, intentional effort to reflect.
Interesting.
It's not just go see, go see, go see, go see. It was like, hey, what is the impact? What does that mean? What is the meaning of this or that? How is my shop different from the other people who are putting up their votes on the screen? So I thought that was really valuable in that it did give people an opportunity to reflect and compare and benchmark with their peers. You can only sit by one or two people on the bus, but we had the entire cohort was putting their votes on a screen.
Yeah, you really got to know the group.
Yeah.
One of the key things that came out of that conversation too was that a lot of the people we had in there are not owners. They're shop floor personnel. They're performers. And when they talked about what are you trying to do, increase revenue or profits, the answer was overwhelmingly profits and not revenue. So they're not using that short-sighted, short-term focus on revenue. They were looking for long-term profits and long-term value. And so that was cool to see that how much of the culture of the shops that were attending Mastery was training all the way down to the performer level of what the importance in the business was.
That's a great, great point too, David.
And then we went to Bagshaw, which first, just walking in the building, it's such a cool building. It's just this cool old wooden floor factory.
Well, it's New England, it's New Hampshire. We're from Ohio, we're from the Rust Belt. And oh, the charm.
It was charming.
Charming, in a charming neighborhood, but it was really, to me, it was powerful testament to the importance of vision, because that's there because 150 years ago, some guy named Walter decided he was going to make products.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but to see, I mean, they have a whole second floor because they could see where the company's going. The second floor is, well, in their words, a museum right now until they clean it out. But they took something that they've been doing for a while and realized that they needed to pivot, and they did.
Yeah.
Successfully.
Yeah, very nimble. So, you know, power of vision, craftsmanship, knowledge of the industry and the market, and at the same time, nimble and flexible enough to realize what's going to be truly sustainable.
And then we had the bonus with the bats. They've started a new Walter Bat Company and showed us how they make a bat, and they've got this whole center there. A few guys took a swing.
Yeah, and you know, that's interesting because I use this concept about what's your superpower, and the Bagshaw superpower certainly appears to be, these people got it 150 years ago with branding. I mean, they've got some of the first trademarks ever issued, right? 150 years ago, there weren't a lot of trademark goods, right? But brand new bat company, They go back, they pull the signature of the founder from 150 years ago, and that becomes the logo for the new Pivot Bat Company. I mean, these people understand branding. It's a superpower.
That's true. That is very true.
It's a superpower. What's your superpower, listeners? What's your superpower?
You know what's cool about them, too, is that I've heard this my whole life. It's like, what do you do? What do you specialize in? And what they have discovered is they specialize in serving the customer wherever their needs lie. They don't make a product. They're not a screw machine company. They serve the customer. I mean, they do everything from making automated knitting needle parts on up to modern Swiss stuff to now making baseball bats. They're meeting the customer where they are and bringing the value and expertise they have in quality to that customer.
That's an outstanding observation, David.
Okay, well, I can't top that, so let's move on to Kinefac and Kinespin.
I can't. I'd like to pass because my mind was blown. So I've been with PMPA for 20 years. I've been in this industry, you know, 50 years, too long. I knew them for their centrifugal products, whether a chip spinner or thread rolling technology.
And that's what I thought we were going to see.
That's what, hey, right? We should go there. They do this. They do this.
Way more than that.
I was in shock.
I think it was 15 minutes just going through all the brands they have.
I was just amazed at the applications. Nearly everyone in some fashion was using centrifugal, you know, technology in some way, but I mean, we're winding coils of 3/1000th diameter wire.
Yeah. That was mind blowing. That's one of those things that sticks with you.
Yeah, yeah. And at the other end, there's thread rolling chunks that even after the gym and coaching, I'd need somebody to spot me to pick up. I mean,
We'd have to, like, you times 10,
yeah.
Those things.
Yeah, I mean, it was just amazingly broad technology, amazingly broad technology. Obviously, the focus on thread rolling and the way to handle the chips add a little value by, you know, segregating the chips in the oil. It was great. I again, like I said, I had, you know, they're only been in my head for 20 years. I had no idea.
Did they, in your group, because we were in different groups, in the Kinecoil lab, did they have you pull that, like, 1-inch long coil out until both of you were on either end of the room?
Yes, and it was like once they got past 900% elongation, I stopped, my brain stopped.
It's kind of like, I mean, imagining rubber, the universe, right? Your brain can't.
Right. I mean, we were well over 900. I mean, 900% would be 1 inch to 9 inch, right? 1 inch to 10 inch.
Yeah.
We're like 1 inch to, you know, what was it? 12 feet?
12 feet.
13
12
feet.
Feet.
I mean, my MBA brain couldn't do that arithmetic. I was like, yeah.
They did so much. Number one, I knew them for chip spinners, and they had such a broad base that it's almost too much. I couldn't figure out, you know, we were going from one room to the next, and they segregated by product line in their plant, and they had so much going on. It almost feels like I visited multiple plants, not one place.
That's
yeah.
A good point.
And the presentation was clear, it was concise, and it was engineering speak. Mm-hmm. It was not marketing speak.
Nope.
It was not cartoons. It was not clip art. It was bring your brain, folks, because we're going to specifically discuss these factors that make a difference in your shop. It was a delight to be in the audience there.
It was a great visit. And speaking of great visits, then we went to Merrill Benny Citizen, and they split us up, so we got to see two buildings, and then we flip-flopped.
Right.
And I know the first building we went in, showing the machines and the technology that they have, But what really stood out for me was that, and I'm going to mess it up, LFV, is that what it is?
The vibration.
Yeah,
low frequency.
Yeah.
The chip, low frequency vibration for breaking chips.
I had never seen that before. That was just, that was amazing. I had never seen that before. I mean, there was a lot to see, don't get me wrong, but that one, that really stuck out in my head.
Yeah, David and I went to the machining side second, and, you know, we got absolutely distracted by the details of their use of color coding.
Oh, yes, that's right. I forgot about that.
So, I mean, we're just, we've been on this color code thing. We learned at another machine tool builder how to use color-coded twist ties to identify status on cables and slings. And we come here and we see literally at workstations baskets with 10 different colors of cable ties that they use to color code their construction.
And they use the two-colored paint pen method for identifying torque on bolts so that you know that somebody did it and it's yellow, and then somebody comes back and checks it and they white it. I mean, it's just incredible. You can see it. It's visual as the customer when you buy the machine, and when you're in the shop, everyone knows that that's been done and checked.
Lesson to future hosts for David and Miles. They see everything.
That's true.
I mean, maybe not the big things you want us to see, but we'll find something that's really unique.
You know, well, what else was unique is the level of automation. I'm a citizen guy, and they had things that they don't advertise, and I had no idea that they even did with their robot integrations, and they had pieces that they were welding three parts together inside the machine and using the part removal robot to place parts in, dead stopping, and then assembling parts in the machine and dropping out a complete product. I mean, it just blowing my mind.
Yeah, there's an old joke about, and then the devil said, let's put letters into algebra, right? Well, when you start doing laser cutting and laser welding, and I mean, is it really NAICS 332721 when you're doing all these metal fab operations on the spindle? We're in a different world now.
I also thought it was cool that they ship out so much from there to other parts of the world. I mean, they're shipping to Asia, they're shipping to Europe, they're shipping to right there from New England.
Yeah, balance of trade.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. And then we got to see DeCruz Manufacturing. Our buddy's over there at DeCruz. That's the second time I've toured it, and I saw something new every time at every stop too. They have a lot going on there at DeCruz.
There's a lot going on. Again, you can tell. So the first thing we saw when we walked in was David. Drum roll. First thing we saw at DeCruz was.
You know, I honestly don't know what you're going to lead into here.
Well, it was all the green and on lights.
Okay. Yeah. Now, that's my favorite thing when I walk in a shop, and I'll agree with that. When I walked in, all I see is green lights in rows, and that was an incredible thing. That's one of the first things I look for as a former shop owner is when I walk into a building, I'm looking for those green lights because, to me, it's my happy place. I see rows of green lights, and that's really cool.
They also had speaking of color coding, a very cool system for their tools where they color coded their tools, and there were four colors above quality and in different parts of the shop that showed if the tool didn't had a color that wasn't up there, then you needed to bring it to the quality lab.
Yeah, I think the one lesson that every attendee got on our mastery program was the ubiquitousness of visual management, like color codes, like process, you know, status displays, whether it was a dashboard or, you know, an end-on light. I mean, it's about visual. We can't taste it. We can't smell it. So we've got to be able to see it. So what are the ways to make it visible, make the process visible? And so the 5S, 6S we saw, 6S, 5S plus safety, saw that in a number of shops. I think that started at Boston Centerless. I think they had it at one of our next stops coming as well.
I think one of the things at DeCruz too, it's like, it's an incredible journey from apprentice to traditional screw machine to Swiss, and it's this life of evolution where he's never stopping. He's always ever changing and going to where the market needs to be. And it's really an incredible journey to think. A lot of people that started out one way are kind of stubborn and resistant to change, but he constantly evolved throughout the years and really saw what was coming.
He did, David, but I can testify that he has a 1948 and a 1955 union-drawn Republic machining handbooks in his bookshelf. So he's true to his roots.
This is true. And sometimes you got to be true to your roots because that's the only place you can find the valuable information.
That's right. So, that was.
Boy, he may want a clip of that for his advertising. That was pretty good there, Dave. All right, and then Soma Tool. Went to Soma Tool. And, well, first of all, they fed us so well.
Yeah, food truck.
Running a food truck. Fueled us all up for the tour. And I'm glad they did because there was a lot to see there at Soma Tool.
Yeah, so you would think that the superpower of a toolmaker would be in their toolmaking.
And what did you see?
I saw an IT technology system that could handle 20,000 standard SKUs and 30,000 additional, and a one-day turnaround, basically, if they had the materials necessary. That's a superpower. It's got nothing to do with tools. Got everything to do with smart IT and business and harnessing data. There's no artificial intelligence. That was raw intelligence. That was human intelligence. And it was implemented. I mean,
Yeah, you could see it happening.
Yeah,
you guys know my soapbox is that we're always hunting waste in the shop, and really most of our wasted time is in the office, and their whole system is illustrative of what you can do when you cut the waste in the office.
Oh,
it's just incredible.
Absolutely. So in our shops, we always have travelers. There's always a paper document that goes with the order, and I watch the gal in the office create the next order. She had a little key fob scanner. She pulled a sticker off a spool on the bottom shelf, pasted it on the computer document, scanned two things, and that order is now totally integrated into their shop control system.
In literal integration, they can follow the physical location of that order.
It was an RFID printed label.
Well, you think about it. You just said it a while ago. 50,000 items. And what did we see? Maybe five people in the office? I mean.
That's true.
Yeah. 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 I mean, you talk about intelligently managing complexity.
It was impressive.
Yeah, just give us the inquiry. We'll put the engineer on it, and here you go. 50,000. 20,000 standard. 30,000. Yeah, we can do these.
It's amazing. It was amazing. That's for sure. And then we went on to iSwiss Tool.
iSwiss, we were all so tired at the end of the day that it was a blur.
I won't say it was a blur because I'm really excited about one of their products because I'm kind of the safety nerd, right? I'm the safety nerd, and I just roll up my left sleeve and I show these three scars, right, from trying to work in the work zone and grabbing a tool and, you know, getting a cut and a permanent reminder that I should have had some kind of protection on my wrist. They make these splendid little fit over the tool, click over the collet. It's on the very last page of their catalog, folks. And every time I see them, I get a copy of their catalog, I open it to the last page, I put it out, and then I look for where they have these, because I think they got orders for 3 or 4 different attendees on the bus for those after I just showed them this. I mean, protect your who wants to bleed into a machine?
Yeah, that's true. That was really cool. And you, again, we were in separate groups, and a lot of people were taking pictures of that and writing that down, and everyone was sharing their scars. Yeah. So,
and they made custom high-pressure pumps. You know, that was something that was really cool and unique that they did in their whole system for the high-pressure pumps. And they had the way they designed them where the manifold sat on the edge of the cover so that it was easy to access. You had quick-release connectors and everything. It was just a really efficient system.
It was really neat to see it with the sheet metal off.
Yes.
Really was. Really was. And they had good motors, too.
They did. Yeah, using Baldor motors. I mean, that's at the upper level of quality right there.
Yeah.
And another thing is they did the custom in-house grinding, special grinding of collets. We got to see that. And so if you want a special size of collet, they custom in-house grind it for you right there.
Well, and then our last day, we went to MasterCam, which I thought we were going to a college campus. That building was so beautiful. And come to find out that they built that building specific for the employees, so that everybody would have a window, and everybody could have that daylight.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
I'm going to go off the rails here, because Dave walks into the foyer there and starts screaming. What was the name of that?
Witch Doctor.
Witch Doctor. That belongs to Witch Doctor. That's Witch Doctor. Go ahead, tell him, Dave.
So we walk in, and they got a display case, and then I see Witch Doctor's weapon sitting in the display case. And for those of you that don't know, my son and I are both BattleBot fans, and so Witch Doctor is a BattleBot. And I see that weapon in the case, and I'm like, holy cow, there's Witch Doctor's weapon. And there was another piece of Witch Doctor. And so I got really excited. I got to send pictures to my son, and I mentioned it to the guy. And he's like, well, we've got Witch Doctor in the other room. They actually had the full-size bot in the other room. And I was in heaven.
He was. We had to take a picture of him with it and everything.
We took pictures. So it's interesting. So the pictures, you talk about what a beautiful campus it was. I'm kind of in a reflective mode, I guess. My favorite picture or exhibit there was a framed picture in the room with that BattleBot, and it was a young boy pulling a red Radio Flyer wagon with two other kids, and the caption on it was, "Our first sales call." I mean, don't get more family than your first sales call is with a Radio Flyer.
Yeah, the next picture was a baby sitting in front of a computer, and it was a succession meeting.
And I don't know if you paid attention, but they had that Apple II computer.
That Apple
II was in that picture on a stand and displayed.
That's right. I mean, there's... traditions are different.
They value their history.
Yes, absolutely.
They value their history, and it was interesting to hear. I mean, it's software, so how do you see software? But it was cool to go into their lab and see how they test their software on the different machines.
Yes.
These guys get to play.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm jealous. You know, I think PMPA needs a budget for new machines so we can play all the time to get the latest and greatest service to everybody. Their lab was incredible. I mean, they had a bike shop, a gym, a really cool lab with lots of machines. And then Carly had studio envy because they had the most incredible television studio.
Yes. Yes, I'm still. You were drooling over the BattleBot. I was drooling over their video studio. It was
and
incredible.
I was trying to figure out whether that bicycle was magnesium or made out of recently frozen hydrogen metal, because that sucker couldn't have been 6 pounds. It was hanging. I mean, it was the lightest bike I've ever
And then on top of all that, they produce 75% of their own electricity on site, on campus, with solar panels.
Yeah, and send some to the grid. So it was an impressive campus, but also learning about their software, I thought it was really interesting how they have taken it from a traditional software and turned it into something more modern that people can use that's more responsive. Incredible. And then last and certainly but not least, AccuRounds. I walked into AccuRounds and I texted Miles, "It's so clean."
Miles found Germany in America.
It's literally it was on a par with the finest shops I've seen overseas in terms of housekeeping, hygiene.
And I've never been in a shop that clean. Like, one of the first things I look at, because it happens in every shop, is the tops of the pipes and stuff in the ceiling.
Yep.
You get this buildup. And in their new building, there was nothing. It was like a hospital. It was probably cleaner than most hospitals. I mean, they took such attention to detail to managing the air quality. It blew me away.
Well, they take attention to detail in everything.
Pharmaceutical quality. It was just pharmaceutical quality. I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, we sat down for our initial meeting. Here's where the exits are. Here's where the break, you know, all this. There's a flipping bookcase in the break room. And it's not got People magazine on it, folks. It's got Gold Rats the Goal. It's got, you know, Turn the Ship Around.
Had Jim Collins Good to Great.
Jim Collins. I mean,
David Goggins Can't Hurt Me. I mean, like, I'm like you. I was drooling over the bookcase.
Yeah, I mean, there the clues. I mean, I felt like I just got dropped into a game. And how many clues can you find? And then you get to power up, right? Because there were clues everywhere about this culture. It was.
I mean, one of the things that we noticed early on is in the chip room, it was just so clean you could sit down and have a picnic. And they wiped out every individual chip pan as they went.
They wiped out every individual chip pan as they went.
And then we went to the floor, we realized why. They've got carts, and they push the chip pan underneath the conveyors on the machines, and it goes directly into the chip pan, and then that's what gets pushed to the chip room and slow. I mean, so it doesn't matter where it's going back to. It doesn't matter if it's brass or stainless. It just, there's no transfer costs. There's no spillage. It's amazing.
And you failed to point out that when they put it back under the conveyor, they've got shrouding. They've got fabric shrouding, so no chips dare. You know, sully their environment.
They use a universal absorbent and hang it around the chip conveyor to keep spillage and everything from going out on the floor. And you could tell, because, I mean, every shop you go into, you always have that weep line around machines where there's a little bit of oil, where there's been a spill. They had none of that. It was incredible.
It was incredible. And they had a huge expansion and went from the new building to the old building. And I thought, here it comes. Nope. Just as clean.
Absolutely.
And the other thing that struck me was how they use automation. They're figuring out how to keep their people at their highest and best use, and taking that puck and putting it on there was not it. Use the cobot to do that so that their people can do more important skilled tasks.
And I think you're right. So again, we go to a shop and you say, oh, this is a technology shop. Oh, this is a robot shop. Oh, this is a, you know, tough material shop. Oh, this is a stainless steel shop. This is a shop where I think the focus really was on the people. I think their superpower was on the people. And one of the first things I noticed was these oversized false Legos that were on people's desks.
Yeah.
And these false Legos were a result of a test that they had taken, and then it gave you clues on how best to communicate with them, like be brief, be prompt, whatever, and another one is show me you care, and another one was, you know,
give me details.
Give me detail,
and
right.
Include me.
Yeah, Right. Right?
Yeah.
So I mean,
and then you stacked them up. What's the most important?
What's most
on
important?
Top?
And I found one where it was be brief, be, you know, and be out of here. And he had two of those on, in the stack. One was number two and one was number four or something. I'm like, yeah, okay, I get this. But, I mean, really, if you've created a process for communicating best with everybody on the team, I mean, that seems like it's an easy detail to miss, and yet it's probably one of the most powerful things that you could do as a manager is make sure you know how to communicate effectively with everybody.
Well, it's like you were saying earlier with the visual management. That's all communication.
Yep.
Everybody needs to know what's going on, hopefully without asking. They just know so they can go on and do their task.
Yep. And but not to minimize their technology. So they had a person that were full-time using 3D printing just to make adjunct materials to support the team.
Yeah, and they were so good at it that one of the customers asked them to make trays for their parts.
For theirs.
Yeah. Impressive. It was just the whole trip was just impressive. But the thing that impressed me the most were our attendees. They were asking incredible questions. They were sharing with each other. They were looking in places that I wouldn't have never thought to look when we're on the tours and gathering information and expertise. And not once did a tour guide say, "Do you have any questions?" And there was crickets. Not once. They all had questions, and it was wonderful. And
well,
I've said it before, I love that buzz on the bus when we get back from a tour and they're just tuck, 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 tuck.
Well, our goal in creating this was to create the next generation of problem solvers, and the way we were going to do it was give them context in the supply chain. And by golly, they got context on this trip.
They sure did.
There wasn't just buzz on the bus either. It carried over. It was at breakfast. It was at dinner. It was just this nonstop open communication about problem solving and things going on in their shops and what they need to do. It was really cool.
So, Dave, this was your first mastery program. What did you think?
I thought it was, for me, I've been in this industry a long time, but it's the first time that I've been able to walk through from the beginning of the supply chain to the end of the supply chain and really get hands-on and see every aspect and really dig in. Like, you know things, but then now you know things. I got to see how steel was made. I got to see how the machines were made. I got to see how other shops did it, how platers did it. I mean, it's just really, I mean, all the way up and down. It's an experience that you cannot replace. It is something that will give you incredible knowledge and understanding of your supply chain and your customers.
And now I have my soundbite for the next mastery program.
Well,
stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Well, thank you, Dave, for sharing that. Carly, is there anything we need to include before I wrap this up?
No, I thought you were wrapping up.
Okay. And that wraps up today's podcast on our mastery program. Thank you for joining us.
For additional information, please visit pmpa.org, where you can find our knowledge centers filled with articles, webinars, more podcasts, and other resources for precision machining.
Yes, and don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast so you won't miss one. Plus, check out our Speaking of Suppliers podcast, where we talk to PMPA technical members and learn about how they can help our shops.
If you aren't already taking advantage of PMPA membership, be sure to check out PMPA.org to learn how we can help you thrive and why is a PMPA membership important, Carly and David?
Because we are better together.
Don't forget to join us next Monday on Speaking of Precision.